Wishes come and go, and I'm forever grateful. Come and tell me long and slow exactly what I wait for. Better times, yeah, better times. Somehow I don't believe it. I built a house up long ago just to up and leave it.
Welcome to On the Wing Podcast, coming at you from Hinds County, Mississippi, near the town of Flora, from Providence Hill Shooting Club. And I'm with the famous Will Primos. Thanks for joining me, Will.
You're welcome, Bob. I sit here shaking my head because I don't know about this famous, infamous stuff, but whatever.
Well, thank you for hosting me and a bunch of conservation groups here the last couple of
years. Yeah, it's been a wonderful thing to have brought so many together, and for the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation to spearhead the project of giving away my set of Purdy shotguns to conservation, providing a big auction where hopefully we can raise some serious money for the truth about conservation.
Well, right there, if that was a press release, folks, you just read the first paragraph of the press release. We're going to break down exactly what's going on here. But I did, over the course of the last 24 hours, have the unbelievable opportunity to shoot clays with your collection of Purdy shotguns.
You did good, too.
I did all right. I held my own.
I don't think you missed.
I don't think I missed, but they were pretty easy targets. Thanks for going easy on us.
Oh, yeah, we went easy on you.
There was no doubt you went easy on us. All right, so let's start with you, which I know was the first thing you said. I don't want to talk about me. But, you know, your name is famous in the hunting world, particularly deer, ducks, turkeys, elk. Yeah. You know, if anybody's chased those species, they've bought a Primos call of some sort in a green package. That's you. You started building calls decades ago, right?
You know, I'm 72 years old. In 1976, I had my first dealer selling my little turkey calls that I was making. I had no clue that I could really make a business out of it. I was born into the restaurant business. My family was in the restaurant business. We had five restaurants in this.
What kind of restaurants?
Pretty much steak. Everything had a Greek flair to it. Steak and seafood, but with the Greek flair to it. There were five different styles of restaurants. Huh. So my grandfather, who came over from Greece when he was 8 years old with his mother and his siblings, landed in New Orleans and ended up in Jackson in 1927. And he opened a little bakery, and that was during the Depression. And one of the bankers walked in one day and said, hey, you need to put in a grill and start selling hamburgers and sandwiches. And next thing you know, he was doing that. And he did well and provided a living, you know, during the Depression. And one thing led to another. And as his children, he had four sons. And as they got older, they each had a restaurant to run. So it was quite the operation, and I was raised in that world, very strong work ethic. After church on Sunday, I was at the restaurant working with my father and one thing or another. But it's very a confining business, and I loved to hunt and fish. I had 50 acres that we lived on and had a pond, and I had a little Red Flyer wagon and fill it up with fish in the summer. And it was just a wonderful life, chasing rabbits and squirrels and learned to shoot a BB and a pellet gun at a very young age, and graduated to 22s and shotguns and that kind of thing.
So you grew up in this restaurant world with your family, and as I understand it, they didn't really have a ton of time to go hunting and fishing. Your immediate dad.
Well, you know, some of the restaurants were closed on the weekends. They were downtown would be some of my uncles had more time. My daddy was my grandfather's general, if you would.
Okay.
And so my granddaddy was the head of it, and then my daddy carried out the orders. My granddaddy would go build another restaurant, and then my daddy would have to go add that one to the portfolio and to run it. And the uncles worked, but they didn't. They had more desires to be off than my daddy did. My daddy was so worried. He was a Depression child. Came out of World War II. He was a Depression child. You know, he went through all that, and he just he was worried about the dollar. He was very frugal. I'll tell you a story. So the pretty much truth about hunting was on the Outdoor Channel. And one day Daddy comes to me and he says, I want to get that show so I can watch it on TV. How do I do that? And I said, well, Daddy, you just call the cable company and tell them you want to add that to your package.
Sure.
And so next time I was talking to Daddy, I said, did you get the cable company to get you the Outdoor Channel? And he goes, Will, that's $2 a month.
Huh.
So he didn't get it.
Wow.
So I'd record them for him and bring them to him and let him watch them. I mean, he was frugal to the
degree. Watching every penny.
Yeah, he just passed away at 98 years old. Mm. Incredible man.
That's a good run.
Incredible. His greatest gift to me was his love and devotion to my mother, who was 97 and still living.
Oh,
and
that's great.
She's awesome. But anyway, so I started making hunting products, and my first one was a cushion that you carried turkey hunting to sit on. And it was not a success, but people that bought them loved them, but it didn't sell itself. So I learned a lot about marketing and how to package a product and stuff like that. And in 76, I started selling the turkey calls and that kind of thing, and had dealers, and things kept growing. I had no idea that the world was going to open up for video, that you could go and have a video camera and shoot a little video and share it with people. And so we started doing that in 1986 with the first tape. In 87, the Truth Series came out, and that thing just bloomed and grew. And so
whose idea was that? Because, it was kind of a perfect recipe of concept and timing.
So I've told this on other shows, but I was in New Orleans at the National Wild Turkey Federation Convention, and I forget the year that was. But that would have been somewhere in the middle 80s. And I had my little booth, and I was trying to sell my calls. Mm-hmm. I'd gotten off from my restaurant job to go down there and be at the convention. And the guy next to me had bought a little video camera, and he had videoed him calling up a turkey. Mm. And he was sitting on a log jam where they load logs, so it's a dump site where all the trucks can load up the logs and all the trash is left there. So he's backed up to that trash pile, and he called up this turkey out of this bottom, and people were lined up watching it. And they were lined up right by my booth. So I was selling a lot of calls. I was about to sell out because I had a captive audience, and I went, I'm fixing to do that. So that's what we did.
He kind of just hit you right in the face.
Oh, yeah. Like it got handed to me.
What I was asking about, growing up, in your immediate family not having a ton of time to hunt. What I was thinking about, and you and I yesterday were walking through the field, and I believe you were telling me, your uncle's name was Gus?
Yeah, one of my uncles, yeah.
You were telling me about Gus's influence on your love of hunting and
so,
connection to bird dogs.
So we lived on 52 acres, and every so many, a quarter mile, was another aunt and uncle. And Gus lived the closest to me, and he was a hunter. He loved duck hunting and quail hunting, and he had setters and pointers. And so he'd pay me like a quarter to clean out the dog pens every morning. So I'd get up for school and go over there and clean out the dog pens. And so when he'd go quail hunting, I was not tall enough and strong enough to really keep up. So he was, fast, and his buddy Buck Dearman was long-legged, and they were kind to me, and they let me go. I was too young to even carry a gun, and that was from the time I was 8, and I started carrying a gun with them when I was about 11. In Madison County, Mississippi, which is the county next to this county that we're in right now, it was just perfect quail habitat, and there were quail everywhere.
Is that right?
And there was no such thing, as Roundup, and the fence rows were perfect, and the habitat was perfect, and you didn't have to ask permission to hunt. You just parked your car on the road and took off and might cross, 20 fences in the prior. People didn't care as long as you respected their land.
Huh.
So, it was awesome. And when those dogs would be on point and I'd watch them and the quail would flush, I mean, I was sold,
Yeah.
And then, life gets busy and everything changed, and the habitat changed, and the quail aren't like they used to be. The wild quail just aren't like they used to be. But I still, that was always my love. It didn't lend itself to selling a lot of calls. Right. Not everybody uses a quail call to hunt quail, you know. Some people use them for location and so forth. And we built a quail
call. Have you built a call? Okay.
Yeah, you just figure out what makes that sound. And there's a lot of calls that have been made prior to me doing it. Mm. I'm very lucky to have borrowed on the technology of others and to tap into the technology that's used to make medical products and automotive products to make better molds. Mm. And so I used a molder, Paul Korn, A1 Archery up in Hudson, Wisconsin, that he owns. And then he had Prism Plastics. And as another business, he's a serial entrepreneur. He's a dairy farmer's boy, high school educated, wonderful person, one of my best friends. He hunts all over the world with a bow. I can tell you so many stories about Paul Korn, it'd be crazy. But anyway, he made great molds, and that was one of our expertise, that we could take somebody and pay them $20 an hour and take two parts and put them together, and they were perfect. Hmm. And that was part of it. And then we also turned a lot of stuff on lathes, on CNC equipment, and to make box calls and turkey calls and duck calls and all that kind of stuff.
I want to take a moment and give a shout out to Purina ProPlan as the national dog food sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's Wildlife Habitat Mission and the presenting sponsor of On the Wing podcast. My pups, Esky, Gitche, and Winter all eat Purina ProPlan, not just because Purina supports the wildlife habitat conservation mission of our organization. That's definitely important to me. But what's most important is that Purina ProPlan is a team of the world's best scientists and nutritionists behind their dog food. Learn more at ProPlanSport.com. Purina ProPlan, nutrition that performs. So I want to leap forward to the shotguns, and we'll connect the dots to all this together in a moment. But so tell me about this. When this idea for the shotguns came together, and then we'll explain the shotguns.
So my daddy, when he got out of World War II, he bought a Fox Model B side-by-side, double trigger, 16 gauge. Hmm. I have it. It's my gun now. I love it. When I touch that gun, it makes me emotional.
Yeah.
And I've taken
it in your face. Yeah, makes you remember your dad.
Yeah. I've taken it to South Dakota and hunted sharptails with it, and my daddy in his last days on this earth, that was the picture by his bed, was me holding that fox and that beautiful sharptail, you know. And anyway, so that was my love, with that was my the side by side shotgun. Mm. And so you go through life and you can't afford a lot of stuff and whatever, and you know, you go to the Remington 870, which was everybody's gun.
Yep.
And you had that. As I built the company and started doing all that, it was about a lot of big game, a lot of whitetail, a lot of elk, turkey. Those were all growth things. It was all great to be a part of the conservation and part of those organizations. Mm-hmm. And so I just love the marriage of metal to wood.
Mm.
And then one day I got to go hunting with a friend, Jim Kennedy, in Montana. And I was whitetail hunting, archery. And he says, "We're going duck hunting next morning. Season opens." I said, "Okay, I don't have a gun. I got it. So I'm going, "Oh my gosh, ain't no telling what Jim's going to hand me." So he handed me this hammer gun, said, "You're not going to hunt with this one, but I want you to look at it." And he said, "I'm hunting with that one. You're going to hunt with this one." It was the one without hammers. It was a hammerless gun. So Jim's shooting the hammer gun. I'm shooting the one that's not. And it's just incredible being back with a side-by-side in my hands. And I said, "You know what? Life's getting short.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fixing to buy me a side-by-side."
Roughly what year is this?
Probably 20 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, probably 20 years ago. And so in 2013, I found out that the Purdy representative was coming to my hometown. There was a guy here who represented Purdy. He had a store. His name was Will Pace. He's passed away. He's a great, great man, wonderful person. And I went to him and said, "I want to meet with those Purdy guys. I want to order a gun." He goes, "Okay." So we went to dinner and sat down. I told him what I was interested in, what I wanted. We designed the first one, which was a 16 gauge, because I wanted to be like my daddy.
Oh, wow.
Shoot a 16 gauge. And I remember when they wrote up that I wanted sling swivels on the guns because I was going to hunt ducks with it. I wanted to be able to sling it on my shoulder.
Yeah.
And they said, we don't do that. We don't put slings. I said, I want sling swivels.
Oh, wow.
On the, and so that's beautifully done. I don't know if you saw
it. I did.
Where they made it part of the gun.
Yeah.
The front one. The back one, of course, is in the stock. Anyway, so that was the first one. And then I told them, I said, I want to reserve serial numbers for consecutive numbers of 410, 28, 20, 16, and 12. And they said, okay, we can do that, but we don't build a 28 gauge or a 410 hammer gun with ejectors. We don't even have the design. I said, well, start designing because if you want the money, I'm going to be saving and I'm going to be trying to buy them. And over the next, you know, years, it all came about, and they built the 20 gauge for me, and then I built the 28, and then I got the 410, and then I ordered the 12.
So the 12 was the last one, okay?
Yeah, because I don't really hunt with the 12 that much. The 16 is my duck gun.
Yep.
I've killed whitetail deer with it. I've killed turkeys.
Have
with
you
it.
Really?
Yeah. I just love shooting. And I wanted to get better. I really never was that good of a shotgunner. Mm. And there were big crossing shots out in front of me, 30, 40, 50 yards or whatever it was. I learned not to shoot at them because I just wasn't going to hit them.
Huh.
And so when I finally got some time, things slowed down for me and my life's work. Not completely by any means, but a little bit. I started shooting sporting clays.
Yeah.
And I remember that first I had this guy named Dale Bouchelot who was going to be here at Providence. And I wasn't even a member of Providence, but you could come and take lessons even if you weren't a member. And so I came out to meet this Dale Bouchelot guy because he was a student of John Woolley from St. Augustine, Florida, who to me is the greatest shotgun fitter who can fit you better than anybody in the country. But anyway, so John had trained Dale, and Dale was a world champion. He had just won in France at the FITASC.
Okay.
FITASC, they call it. FITASC is a French acronym. The French invented it. It's Fédération Internationale de la Chasse, if I can. My French is probably really bad. but anyway, so, you know, there we were. I pulled that gun, that hammer gun, side by side, Purdy out of the case, and Dale Bouchelon looked at me and just shook his head. Oh my gosh, I got to deal with this guy. And so that's what I shot with.
Yeah.
And I began to understand how to look at the bird, the clay target, whatever I was shooting, rather than the gun.
Yeah.
I was a marksmanship instructor in the Air Force. So I trained pilots and co-pilots and crews of airplanes, C-130s primarily, how to properly operate an M16, a 38, a 45, and how to put a little grenade launcher on the M16 in case they got shot down.
Wow.
They could defend themselves. So right. That was my job. I joined Air Force in 1970. So here I am learning to shoot a shotgun. And then I go to St. Augustine, took my wife down there, stayed at a nice place, and I took lessons from John Woolley himself. And the more I shot and the more I understood what he was trying to teach, the better I got. And I was going, oh my gosh, I wish I'd have done this years ago. You know, so, and then I told him, I said, look, I said I wasn't going to shoot sporting clays. I was just going to shoot to get better.
Yeah.
But I really like doing this. I want to buy an over and under. So I bought over and under and I started shooting more and more. And then I'd have opportunities to meet like Bill McGuire, one of the world champions many times over. And, Bill was just so generous and so nice, and he helped me with every instructor is a little different and explains things a little bit differently, and one thing leads to another. And this, I take lessons from a lot of different people, and I'm learning, I'm getting better, I'm beginning to understand my game, and I begin to understand that sporting clays is real mental. Now you weren't really asking the question going there, but I'm going to finish this line of thought. So a guy named Anthony Matarese, he wrote a book. And it's called Straight Shooting. And he's been shooting sporting clays since he was 12 years old. And he's the master of the United States. He's won in Europe. He's won everything in the United States more than once. He's the most lauded sporting clay shooter. And he wrote this book, unbelievable coffee table book, $100. And I dissected the book. I read it 3 times. And then I made notes from it. I made 92 pages of what I call cliff notes. Huh. And I could refer to it. And I learned. And I'm getting understanding more and more about how to do this, how to compete, how to shoot 100 rounds and try to score well and not miss any. Of course, you miss some. I do. Anyway, so.
I do, too.
Yeah. So one thing leads to another. And Matt Reese is coming to Providence to shoot. He's going to be flew in just to shoot in the FITASC event, the FITASC event. And so I heard that. I got my book and went out to meet him. I met him. I said, Mr. Matt Reese, would you sign my book for me? He's 37 at the time. And I said, would you sign my book for me? And he goes, well, I'll be glad to sign your book. Went, how does this guy know my name? Turns out he's an avid duck hunter and uses all our waterfowl products, including the winch duck call. So he and his brother are just avid. They live on the Delaware Bay in New Jersey. And the next day, he sends me an email. I said, how did he get my email? And he says, Will, call me sometime. I told him the story about me couldn't shoot a crosser and what I was learning.
Uh-huh.
And he says, call me sometime. I emailed him back. I was coming back out to Providence to shoot more in that event, in more competition. And I said, is now a good time? I got a few minutes. And he goes, yeah, now it's a good time. I called him. And he said, let's write a book together.
Wow.
And you have? And I said, I don't know how to write a book. He says, I'll handle all that. We'll get together. You'll fly out to New Jersey. I'll give you lessons. We'll have an editor record everything, record your story, let you tell your travel, your path, your journey. And we're going to teach people in the field how to be a better shotgunner. Mm. And that's what we've done. It's called Straight Shooting for Hunters. And it's available on Amazon. So anyway, that's been kind of my shotgun and my journey after Primos.
And Max McGraw Foundation helped put that book together too, right?
Well, Carrie Luft is the executive director of the McGraw Foundation. And he's a level 2 instructor. And he's the only Anthony Matarese approved instructor in the world.
Huh.
And so he'll teach you Matarese's techniques right there in Chicago, north of Chicago.
Gotcha.
And so anyway, so yeah, Anthony, he was the editor of Anthony's book and of our book.
Okay. Well, shout out to Max McGraw Foundation. They just sent me a copy of your book.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to checking it out. I'm going to come back to that in a moment.
Okay.
Let's go back to the shotguns real quick. So you had all these shotguns, these Purdy's, custom made. What kind of wood is
a Turkish walnut.
Turkish walnut. And then every single one of them has a different bird.
Yes.
Engraved on the receiver.
Yeah.
Tell us about, so let's start with the 12-gauge and what's engraved.
Okay, so the 12-gauge has a rock pigeon on it because that's what was famous in Europe, was the pigeon shooting, box pigeon shooting, and Earl de Grey was one of the famous shooters of all time over there, and he was a hammer gun guy.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, a lot of people say, they look at the gun and they go, ooh, the hammers, they're going to get in my way when I look. Did you see the hammers?
So for folks that don't know what a hammer gun is, it's two hammers on the top of the receiver that you cock to make it ready to shoot when the safety comes out.
Yeah. So
it looks like a kind of a Revolutionary War era shotgun.
Well, back in those days, they didn't have CNC equipment or solid CADWorks programs to be able to make, you know, design stuff. It's all on paper in the head. Mm. And so these guys are building these shotguns totally by hand and with mechanical drawings.
Wow.
And they're figuring it out. So they didn't have a way to put the locking mechanism, if you will, inside. So when you opened the gun, it recocked it.
Mm.
And so that was later on. So the hammers are the precursor to the hammerless guns of today.
Huh.
And it's just old school, and they're beautiful. And if you paid much attention and looked at those hammers, all of the hammers on all 5 guns are Purdy dragons. So when the dragons go forward, the fire comes. The dragon breathes fire.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's a rock pigeon on that particular gun. The 16-gauge is waterfowl. That's your duck gun.
That's a mallard.
Yeah, that's mallard. And so then the 16, the 20 is the 28 is a merge. The 20 is a rough grouse.
Yep.
And the 410 is a dove.
And What do you let's in terms of the engraving? Do you have a favorite engraving? Which one you think is the most beautiful?
They're all equal in what you know. The 16 will always hold a special place, yeah. But they're all beautiful. So, they're so beautiful it's stupid.
They're
looking
gorgeous.
At a Mona Lisa on the wall. I mean, I went to the factory in May and got the tour and watch them. And I went to West London Shooting School and shot with George Digweed. George Digweed is a 28-time decorated world champion from England. He's won the world more times than anybody, even close friends with Anthony Matarese. And so I went over there, and George, I got in touch with George, and he said, I'd be glad to meet you at the West London Shooting School. We can shoot for a whole day together. I said, okay, great. And I said, what about a gun? He said, you shoot my gun. I said, okay. He shoots a Perazzi, full and full. That's what he shoots. And I shot it, and I shot it real well. I shot it so well, he said, you ought to get one of these. Anyway, while I was there, a lot of the craftsmen that built my guns have retired. They were at Purdy for 35, 45, 50 years.
Wow.
And they came to the school and surprised me.
Oh, wow.
And I have my picture made with all these craftsmen that made these guns. So here I am, 72 years old.
Yeah.
And who knows what life's going to bring. I'm healthy and everything's great, but I wanted to be in control of the sale of the guns, and I wanted to try to create a ripple effect. I wanted to bring these conservation groups together. I wanted them to sit down at a table together and break bread, which we did last night, which I can't believe happened. So we've got RMEF, DU, NWTF, we got Quail and Pheasants and the Congressional Sportsman Foundation, yep. All in the same room,
yep.
All talking about this project, about the truth about conservation, and about Rock Island. And Rock Island's here, Rock Island Auctions, worldwide auctions of the finest guns available. And here they are engineering this auction that's going to happen in December of 25. Be a huge media campaign next year, exposing as much as we can. And the guns will appraise, and you know, the guns are going to appraise somewhere probably right at $1 million south of that, north of that. I'm not sure where they'll come in. If you bought them today, those guns would cost you about $1.2 million or $3 million if you bought them today. I've shot the guns, and so they've all been hunted, so they'll appraise for a little less than that probably. But they're all in perfect shape. There's not a nick on any of them. Of course. But anyway, here we are going down the road, and the guy who buys them, anything over appraised value, they can write off to conservation because all the money is going to these organizations, to the 501c3 public companies to raise awareness and money for conservation. I mean, think about it. Many of our constituents that we in the field with every day have never heard of the Congressional Sportsman Foundation and how important they are. All they do is work with legislation by state and at the federal level to protect our hunting and fishing rights, to be sure that it's protected. Hunting, fishing, trapping. I mean, I just did a campaign with them. You know, it's I hunt, you know, I fish, and I vote. And it's very important that we get out there and vote for the right people who are going to protect our hunting and fishing.
So rights. I'll underscore a few of the things you kind of covered the entirety of it. Which is perfect. You're donating all of these shotguns. It's being organized. This contribution is being organized by the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation, with the contributions going to Ducks Unlimited, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, National Wild Turkey Federation, Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. It's going to be auctioned off through Rock Island Auction
House. By
Rock Island. And you selected these groups largely because of habitat component. You want to see these dollars from these shotguns go back and hit the ground.
I want people to be aware that without the habitat, we're not going to have it. You can have so many other elements, but if you don't have the things that benefit the species, especially upland birds. And so Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, they're doing so much with invasive grasses and understanding that, understanding everything they do to protect elk. But when they do that, they're creating upland bird habitat because what's good for elk is good for upland birds.
Web of life, right?
Yeah, it's a web of life. So it all goes together, and the work that pheasants and quail do is awesome. And I've focused that on Arizona. Why Arizona? Because I love Arizona. Mearns, Gamble, and Scales, Mearns especially. I mean, I'm going back again this December. I go every year. It's just incredible. Very physical.
Yeah.
And it's a mountain bird. And they're good and they're fast. And, you know, thank heavens I've been learning to shoot better because I wouldn't hit them if I didn't.
So you've talked about your love affair with the 16-gauge and duck hunting. But there's a little dirty secret about your love for quail hunting and your favorite shotgun in this collection, isn't it?
That's the 28. I mean, I like the 22, but that 28 balance is so good. And it's such a, I don't know why it's so efficient. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a great cartridge.
That was.
I like the 410 too, though.
I had the opportunity to shoot the 28 gauge and the 20 the most. And those are just sweet shotguns.
They're sweet.
A covey of quail rising, an elk talking to you bugling, a turkey coming on full strut, or a ducks dropping out of flooded timber. What gets your heart racing the most?
Oh, just so thankful. Most of them come at different times. You know? turkeys in the spring, fall, you can pick when you're going to go after the upland birds and the quail and that kind of thing. September's my time to be in the elk woods. Mm. I mean, I have been fortunate to be in some of the most incredibly beautiful Western country habitat. Southern Colorado and Northern New Mexico is probably my favorite. Mm. Beautiful alpine country, all the way even above timberline. I mean, I've called elk off of above timberline into the timber. You know, all of that, it's just crazy. And the waterfowl comes in deep winter south. January is usually our best month. Mm. So thank heavens it doesn't come at the same time. But, you know, if I can take a lucky 13 and watch a big old 8-pound bass slap the crud out of that thing, that's good too.
Yeah. And I want to take a moment and thank Onyx Hunt as a proud supporter of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's On the Wing podcast and a national sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's Wildlife Habitat Mission. Click on the link in the show notes for this episode, and you'll be taken to an Onyx website where you can enter the code PFQF to get 20% off your subscription to Onyx. And a portion of your purchase will go back to Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's Wildlife Habitat Mission. So thank you so much to Onyx, one of the tremendous partners of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. All right, as we wind towards a close here, what does success in this project look like for you? You're so incredibly generous. You know, as I saw you putting away the shotguns yesterday after all of us shot, these shotguns are more than just pieces of wood and metal to you.
They're dear to me.
They're extremely dear to you. You know, you're oiling them, taking care of each one as you put them into the case. It wasn't any handler or any, I mean, you're Will Primos. there wasn't anybody taking care of them except you. You took great care. You had, you know, you were cleaning every single one before you put it in the case. It was almost like you were having a conversation with.
I was saying goodbye.
I could see that.
Yeah.
This is hard for you. Yeah. And why now? And you touched on why now. But what success look like to you? Because these are incredibly meaningful.
You're talking about discipline here, and the definition of discipline is giving up what I want now for what I really want later. Mm. And what I really want later is for all the little boys and girls. When I was watching Kurt Gowdy on TV growing up on American Sportsman on TV, that had that dream to go in those fields and to walk those places and to experience the wildness that God created for us. The success is seeing as many of them learn about this world as we can and expose our constituents to the Congressional Sportsman Foundation and their work for us to protect hunting and fishing. Hmm. And for these four strong conservation organizations who have been a part of my life before they started, to come together and collaborate together and to do more together for conservation And for these dollars that are raised through the sale, the auction of the guns, whoever wins the auction, anything paid for over and above appraised value is going to be able to be written off by the person that acquires them. And for that money to be create a ripple effect, and for that money to be turned into more dollars through grants and other opportunities that are available that these organizations are very good at. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping to see $1 million turn into $10 million.
Wow.
That's my goal. I don't know that we'll get there, but that's my wish.
Yeah. And for folks that maybe don't know this or aren't making the connection, you and your wife don't have kids.
No, we do not.
And this is a way for you to leave a legacy.
Well, I've never really – look, when I'm gone, that's it. Nobody needs to remember me. I was with a writer one time, and we were standing there looking over a beautiful Tupelo gum break in my farm in Mississippi Delta, and he goes, "What do you want on your tombstone when you die?" And I said, "Well, about the only thing I want is, God, thank you for giving me a try. Thank you for letting me have a chance."
Well, it's pretty powerful. Thank you for including Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever.
Thank you for being a part. Thank you for y'all's commitment to come here, to come this far, and to put this together. I cannot thank y'all. Everybody's been so engaging. It's been an incredible few days.
Yeah. One final thought on a lighter note, you know, with your book, Straight Shooting for Hunters, A Champion's Guide to Using Shotguns in the Field.
And the champion's Anthony Materis.
Anthony Materis with Will Primos.
Yeah.
Bird hunters out there listening closely, give us a tip, a wing shooting tip.
The best tip that I can give you is when you're walking up behind those pointed dogs.
Yeah.
Of course, you want your gun's going to be out in front. You don't want it under your armpit. You want it forward so you can bring it straight up.
Okay.
You want to bring up to your mount, but your eyes are the most important. Don't look where you think the birds are held up. Look beyond and above that. The eyes are maybe 100,000 times faster, I forget the figure, at coming back into focus as they are going out into focus. Mm. So you don't need to rush it, but your eyes come back. When you see the flash, your eyes come back. You grab the flash. If it's bobwhite quail, you'll have a millisecond to identify it as a female or a male. And you can pick out the male if you want. And then you mount and go to it. And when you mount and go to it, you're looking for something on that bird other than the bird itself. You're looking for the beak, the head, the eye, the white ring around a pheasant's neck, whatever it might be.
Mm.
So your eyes out beyond and coming back is probably the biggest tip.
Boy, that's the Ted Williams philosophy of bird, right? You know, the whole Ted Williams always said, you know, when the ball's coming from the pitcher's hand, read the laces. Don't look at just the general ball, right?
I have heard that,
Look for the laces, and same thing, look for the male quail, look for the ring of the neck of the pheasant. And small, miss small.
Yeah, the great football players, when they're looking at that ball, they don't see the ball. They're seeing the stitching, or they're seeing somebody's name written on the ball.
Yeah, concentrate. Again, thank you very much for your generosity.
Thank you.
Thank
you for your enthusiasm. You're awesome. Thank you, Bob.
Well, thanks very much. There you go, folks. Will Primos, look for this incredible auction coming December 2025. We will be sharing links to the auction. You'll get amazing views, photography and video of these terrific shotguns, a 12, a 16, 20, 28, and a 410. Let's be honest, the 28 is the best one. It's got
I will bring this up. These are consecutively serial-numbered guns. It's the only set in the world.
And they will be auctioned as a set. So even though 28 is my favorite, you got to buy the whole lot.
That's right.
But know that those dollars, like Will mentioned, are going to get matched and be able to be magnified for conservation our missions, collective missions for all the groups, and put more habitat on the ground. For Will Primos, I am Bob St. Pierre, reminding you to always follow the dog. Something good will rise. Thanks, folks.